The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Bruce Valanche. Remember on Hollywood Squares, the guy to the left of Whoopi, if that's possible? I'm listening to John Orlando on the PVD cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 275. Yeah, let that sink in for a moment. I said 275. 275 episodes of the PVD cast are in the books, so to speak, and that blows my mind. And I mean, all I gotta say is thank you to anyone that's checked out an episode. I really appreciate it. I'm not going to go on and on. I'm going to keep this short because I want to get into the topic at hand. Who is my guest? My guest is a screenwriter, an actress, a producer. She's just into all types of movie making and lots of different projects. Her name is Allison Morgan, and she is from Ohio, but she now is living in New York City. A few months back, Allison had a short film called First Date that got picked up by Hulu as part of their Halloween shorts collection. And so we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about her recurring role on Law & Order SVU, some of the other projects that she has going on, or even some that are maybe coming to an end, like a particular production company called The Fuck It Club. I know it's a weird name, but there's a pretty cool backstory to it. So we're going to talk all about that, but before I get to my conversation with Allison, I need to let you know about the great sponsor of the PVD cast, World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and they have tons of comics, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, back issues, posters, comic book supplies. I already said that, but they have tons of those. I had to mention it twice. That's how much they have. But anyways, basically, they got you covered if you're a comic book fan. So you should stop on over to the store, or you can check them out online at wgcomics.com. You can even find them on Facebook. Just look for at WGComics. And if you want to give them a ring, just call 614-891-3000. And no matter how you interact with the fine folks from World's Greatest, please let them know that you heard about the store right here on the PVD cast. All right, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I sit down with Allison Morgan to talk all about movie making. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening is Allison Morgan. Allison, how are you doing?
You know, we're all still living through this combo pandemic, recession, civil war, and just making the best of it. So, I'm doing pandemic well, I think. Thanks for asking.
I like that combination. We just, you know, it was like a tossed salad of terrible things.
Yeah, it's like a burrito of nightmares.
Yeah. Well, you are a person that has a lot of different projects going on. Most recently, your short film, First Date, just got picked up by Hulu. So we want to talk about all of that, but let's start off at the very, very beginning. How did you get into this business of making movies?
It's probably my lack of self-esteem, you know? You know, the long answer is I started doing theater at Columbus Children's Theater when I was 10 years old. My background is as a performer, as an actor. It's why I moved to New York, was to have a performance career. And throughout all of my time as an actor, I also was very impatient and also wanted to always work on my own projects, work on creating. I guess film came later, but theater projects for myself because I I had a hard time with waiting for auditions and then doing auditions and being rejected. So I was always an actor who wrote, although the writing part of my career didn't really become my primary focus until a handful of years ago. At Ohio State, I was really encouraged by Joy Riley, a professor in the theater department, to work more on my writing and being an actor who wrote. She had a class specifically for it. There's a new works focus section of the department that was really integral. And I guess I'm saying all of this is that there were seeds planted really early. But around 2013, I saw this competition called the Bombay Sapphire Imagination Series. And the idea was screenwriters, famous screenwriters, would provide 5 lines of dialogue out on the internet and solicit screenwriters to send in their best 5-page screenplay utilizing those lines. So I saw it just on a whim, said like, all right, I could do that. And then I won. I was one of 5 scripts that was selected to be produced and premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival in 2014. And that was a little tiny door that opened for me career-wise and also mentally, where I thought like, oh, it's interesting. It's interesting that I like am exploring this different part of my creativity and people seem to be responding to it. So when that happened, I started writing more scripts and entering more competitions and going down that path. And I still perform as well. But the writing has definitely taken the forefront lately.
And you've won tons of awards for your writing. I mean, looking at your website, you listed a lot of accolades. For yourself, what is the writing process like? Is it the same no matter what the project is, or because the project may be a different genre, or it might be something you never tackled before, you change up the writing process? How do you go about that?
It's very hard, and there's a lot of procrastination. you know, I am now working on, just got hired to work on a web novel that's going to be released in chapters sometime this spring. And I was meeting with the editors today and saying to them, I'm actually a pretty fast writer when I know what I'm writing. If I have the idea, if I have the outline, I can sit down and bang it out pretty quickly. For me, it's like improv. It's where my acting background comes in. When I'm writing dialogue, it's one big improv game. And if I stop in the middle of it, it's hard to kind of get back into that flow. So I guess the larger answer is I used to be really resistant to outlines because it feels like more work because it is more work, but I understand the benefit of them because the more that I do it, once I have a roadmap, I can then kind of get into the script and at least know where I'm headed. And if I pause, can go back to it and pick up where I left off without feeling completely crazy.
Okay. You know, I just threw out the idea of a genre. Do you have a favorite genre that you like to write?
I tend to write comedy, actually. And a lot of my TV scripts are, I think they'd be classified as rom-coms, although I'm very anti-rom-com. I'm going to draw a line in the sand and say rom-coms are ruining relationships. So I like to write anti-rom-coms, which I guess you could say is some of the themes in First Date, too, is about a relationship gone wrong. But to answer your question, I tend to like and gravitate towards comedy, dark comedy, female-driven comedy, and, you know, shows like The Good Place, that's comedy rooted in a point of view and bigger questions about morality and accountability and, you know, these big, heavy things that allow you to also be absurd and do fantasy and magic and all of these other really exciting things too.
I'm going to cycle back for a minute.
Yeah.
you hate rom-coms. I'd like to dive a little deeper into this. Why sure. Do you hate rom-coms?
I think that there's a very classic structure to a rom-com. If you look at When Harry Met Sally, if you look at You've Got Mail, if you look at Pretty Woman, they're all kind of about two people figuring out in 2 hours that they were meant for each other all along and it ends in a big tidy bow and they go live happily ever after. It's just not the way most relationships look. I think there aren't a lot of stories that show how hard dating is, or when you meet your person, how hard it is to maintain that relationship. I don't have illusions about, you know, ultimately film and TV and storytelling is about illusion and is about fantasy. But what I think it does is sets up an unrealistic expectation for young people who see this in their adolescence, teenage years, college years, who think like, well, if I don't feel that way, then it's wrong, or it has to be perfect. And I think it absolves people of accountability in relationships to keep looking for this like perfect moment that isn't real, that's created for film and TV.
Okay. No, that makes perfect sense. I will say that I think that it, especially in the last, I would say 15 years or so, I think you're seeing some of that coming through on the screen and on television, that there is this idea that you can have relationships, but they're hard work. You know, I could think right off the top of my head, I think that, you know, one of those films that shows that, Blue Valentine, is a fantastic example of that. Is it's not really rom-com, but it is, this is really how it is, you know, when you're struggling.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't classify Blue Valentine as a rom-com.
Right,
but
no, but I, you know what I mean? Like you're getting at least not the stereotypical, you know, we're having a hard time, but we'll work it out and we'll be together at the end. Because that's not always how it works.
Listen, I'm part of Bachelor Nation. I watch The Bachelor. It's an obsession for me. But those shows also say, like, you have 8 weeks to fall in love and you better get engaged by the end. And millions of people watch it and buy into this manufactured love story. And I just wonder about the deeper psychological damage that that's doing to generations of people looking for romance.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about First Date, shall we? How did this project get right off the ground? Like, what was the catalyst for starting the project?
The idea for First Date came from, for whatever reason, I just had this image in my head of going to a stranger's house and seeing a picture of yourself on the wall. And I've just been playing a lot in my own work, I guess, with memory and identity and how the two shape each other. And I thought, wouldn't it be horrifying to go home with somebody you just met and find a relic of yourself, to find a picture that you didn't remember taking or being in? And so that was actually the genesis of the idea. And then all of the time loop stuff kind of came later, but it all came out of the idea of particularly going home with somebody you like, and that experience of like those butterflies and being really excited and then having something stop you in your tracks that's an image that you weren't expecting. So the project came through an incubator at it's the Fox Disney ABC studio, but they have a division called 20th Digital, which is their digital operations, and they specifically curate a series called Bite Size Halloween. So they invite filmmakers to come and pitch to them, pitch ideas. And then out of the, you know, 100 or so pitches they get, they select a handful, again, to kind of commission, produce, and premiere online. And my meeting of their team was facilitated through a film festival. I met one of the creative executives at a festival where I had another script in competition. And we really hit it off at our meeting at the festival. And so they asked me to come in and pitch in February of 2020. I pitched them 5 ideas. First Date was the last one I pitched. And I knew in the room that they liked it because it was the only one that they really had anything to say about. I was telling this story to somebody earlier, but quickly, I also pitched them on a Friday afternoon at, I think, 3 p.m. And they had told the filmmakers who were going in, okay, you can bring up to 5 ideas. So I brought 5 ideas. You know, First Date, I was frankly probably the most excited about, but I brought 4 others just in case. I got there 2:45 and somebody in the office said, like, so you're our last appointment for the day. Just wanted to let you know the person before you brought in 10 ideas and is running an hour late. To which I was like, oh, okay, great. And in my mind, I was like, these people just want to go home. Like, it's Friday afternoon. Somebody's already keeping them an hour over. This is a terrible position to be in. So, you know, I went into the room. It was the first time I'd ever pitched anything. I'm still developing in my writing career, so I didn't quite know what to expect or how it was going to go. And I am very lucky that although I don't have a background in horror, I did talk a little bit about horror in relationships and how first dates can be quite scary. And I think they responded to it.
Yeah, it's a great take on on a horror genre that probably let's be honest, a lot of the horror movies kind of seem to be formulaic anymore. You know what I mean? It's the same old, same old. So something new and something refreshing, that's something great. So you want to talk a little bit about the cast and the crew that were cast in First Date?
Yeah, sure. So I, like I said, I'm a performer, I'm a writer, I'm also a producer. The one thing I don't do is direct. So I knew when they said yes to it that I wanted to work with somebody that I knew. So the team let me bring in a handful of candidates to interview. And the first person I brought in was Meredith Alloway. Meredith and I knew each other professionally. Again, we've kind of crossed paths through the film festival world. And I am such a fan of her work and her eye. And to be honest, we didn't know each other that well. I just had a feeling that her taste and mine would align. She was also one of the only people who, before going into interview, we had an hour-long conversation about the script and about the characters. And it was just really clear to me how much she cared about it going into it and cared about my vision and what I wanted to talk about. So she's amazing. And then through Meredith, we brought on Lizzie Shapiro, the other producer. And Lizzie also has a robust film producing career with films at South by Southwest and a bunch of other places, and has a big network of crew. I think through the three of us, we also came up with Charlotte Hornsby, our DP, who created all of those colors and those looks. And so as you might be able to start untangling, it's a mostly female crew, which I think it was not by design initially, but as we started going down that path, made a lot of sense for the story. And then as far as cast, the incredible Carrie Young and Hari Neff, who I did not know going into this. Kara and Meredith had worked together before. Hari's work, I knew a little bit. I'd seen Assassination Nation that she's in. And we were tossing around names with our casting director, with Rory Bergman. And we just kept coming back to those two as a pairing. There was something about their energy that just made sense to me. I think particularly with Alex, with Hari, it was always important to me that Alex doesn't just read as a one-note villain, that everything she's doing from a place of love. It's, misguided love. It's hurtful love. But I wanted somebody that still had that, like, that vulnerability, that empathy, and also like a dangerous quality. There's something about her that's also unstable. So all of that was very in Hari, and I think she really brought that out. And then with Kara, again, I just wanted a Billy who was fun and was light and somebody that you really wanted to go on this journey with. And I think Kara really, really brings us in. So yeah, I couldn't be happier with our cast and crew.
How's the feedback been for First Date?
Good.
Okay.
I wish I could say that I don't read reviews, but I 100% do. And we had a very nice write-up in The Cut. We had a piece in Paper and a handful of other places. And I think I can say it's actually being developed as a feature now. Which literally just happened and is very exciting. But what I was going to say is, I pitched it as a feature. I went back to Fox. They asked me to come in and talk about what I would see in the feature. I think it should exist as a feature. To kind of my rom-com point earlier, is I don't see a lot of stories about this kind of relationship, about queer relationships, about interracial relationships, about you know, particularly not just in the rom-com space, but in the loop genre. So I think this queer erotic thriller space is something that is underexplored and something that I'm really excited to talk about. But, you know, a couple of these reviews had said, like, we want more, we want a full length, we want more of the story, which I think helped when I went in to tell them that we wanted to make a bigger movie.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you use whatever you can use to help you get that movie made. I mean, that's really great news.
Yeah, well, it's being developed. That's all I can say is working on the script is being developed. There are no guarantees of anything yet.
Oh, well, there's no guarantees in life, I mean, at all. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you also are a producer for several film festivals. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about those film festivals and also maybe clue in the listeners as to what your responsibilities are as a producer?
Yeah. How do you quantify literally everything? you know, I actually do a handful of different jobs at different festivals. And this has all changed in the last year with COVID, obviously. I am somebody who's worked for 15 years as a live event producer, as a theater producer, as somebody who's facilitated events, you know, outside of the computer realm. So when everything went online, I was lucky that I was able to ride that wave to be able to move my work online. Producing for a film festival is really top to bottom. You know, so for the Indie Street Film Festival, for example, I'm the festival producer, senior programmer. So what that means is I'm constantly scouting films. You know, in the real world. We bring people out to Red Bank, so it's coordinating with filmmakers, it's coordinating jury, it's deciding screening slots, what parties are going to look like, how much ticket prices are. There's a whole budget component, there's a marketing component, there's a people management component. So it's a little like being a CEO of a company that has no money all the time. But you know, I got involved with film festivals because it's another way for me as a creative person to stay engaged in the arts and entertainment and meet other filmmakers and industry. And I really do love it. It's exhausting, especially right now. I'm just on Zoom all the time. I'm currently the programs producer for San Francisco Film Festival and a virtual event producer for the DC Environmental Film Festival. And co-producer on the NYC Indie Theater Film Festival. So I'm doing three of them right now all at once. So it just means a lot of Zoom all the time.
I'm going to ask, when you said that one of your responsibilities is scouting films, how does that process work? Do you have maybe a checklist in your mind or maybe even a checklist in your phone as to certain types of films? Or is it just you walk in and let's go see what we got here. Let's go wherever you're screening them at. Let's see what we have. How's the process for that?
Yeah. And I guess the answer varies from festival to festival and programmer to programmer. So I guess I can talk specifically about Indie Street. And what I should preface with is Indie Street and many/most festivals, including Sundance, South By, you know, the big festivals all have open submissions. And so for Indie Street, we do watch every submission that comes in. We have a group of screeners that watches them first. And then if they think it should be programmed, another one of either myself or somebody else on our programming staff will watch it. Myself, the other programmer, Paulina and Jay Webb, our artistic director, we all program ultimately together. And so we all watch everything that kind of makes it through the screen feed. Through Film Freeway. So that's step number one, is I don't want to discourage people to think that, like, you know, that we're scouting and not watching submissions, because we absolutely are. And I will also say my project Sitting, which is my film other than First Date that's kind of out in the world right now, it's gotten into three festivals through just blind submissions. Didn't know the programmers. I was very, very lucky. So as far as scouting, you know, again, right now, because of COVID world, all these festivals are online. So I bought virtual tickets at Sundance. I bought a virtual pass to let me see all 7 shorts programs. I watched another 4 features. I'm kind of listening to what my colleagues are talking about. Slam Dance just happened. I watched some programs at Slam Dance. And so the first step is kind of identifying festivals that bring in high quality films and then watching for the content that moves me. To answer your question of like, is there a checklist of what you want? No. I mean, I think it's the way anyone would watch TV or watch a film is you just respond to what you respond to. I think there is a component of what will our audience respond to. It's a combination of personal taste and also what serves our community. And so for Indie Street specifically, it's a Red Bank, New Jersey-based festival. So I'm always looking for New Jersey-based films, filmmakers, some kind of Jersey component that that we can bring in. But then I just, you know, send an email to the filmmaker and say, hey, I really dug your film. Would you like to submit it? Even at this stage, I'm not saying like, hey, I love your film, be in our festival. Because again, we work collaboratively and I want my fellow programmers to see that film before we bring it in. But yeah, I'm always kind of looking out for my friends' films. You know, again, right now Sitting is in the Omaha Film Festival online. So I'm going to watch some Omaha films this week and see if there's anything there that I get really excited about. Yeah, it's an interesting time for filmmakers and for content. I keep saying, like, I think filmmakers should be excited that they're getting films in front of more people than ever. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that I would have gone to Omaha to screen this film, but now my parents can see it in Ohio. The part that we're missing is the networking and connections part, which is how I got to make my Hulu film. So I do worry about how film festivals are going to bridge that gap kind of moving forward. But hopefully we won't live in this space for too much longer.
Okay. Yeah. Agreed. Well, let's talk about another, I guess you could say, organization. We're going to use that term. What is the Fuck It Club?
That is my theater and film production company. In the spirit of, why are we waiting for people to give us work? Fuck it. Let's make our own work. Again, which goes back to my general impatience. It was started in 2010. So we just hit our 10-year anniversary in COVID times. And we were just about to do a big 10-year anniversary show and party. And frankly, bring the company to a close. I think my producing partner and I both just felt like after 10 years of doing plays, you know, she and I both have started moving more into film and TV. And so we wanted to just celebrate, acknowledge, and move on. And in the meantime, the company continues to live on indefinitely. It's all short form work. So it's short theater, short films, and short term events, which is sometimes pop-up theater in a bar and sometimes parties. And it's been, you know, it's been a great gift. And I've met friends, I've met colleagues, I've met just so many people that I'm so close to in my life because of it. And I am both sad to kind of put it to rest, and also I'm ready. It's just, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money. And I keep saying, you know, like now being a person in my late 30s, I approach making work differently than I did in my early 20s when I started doing theater companies in New York.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Allison for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all of your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, back issues, posters, comic book supplies, basically anything you need for your fandom, they got. And if you want to make sure you don't miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for their pull system. Every time that book shows up, they'll hold a copy for you until you come in and pick it up. So you can check them out online at wgcomics.com. They're also on Facebook. Just look for @WGComics. Or if you're in the area, stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And you can even give them a ring. Just pick up the phone and call 614-891-3000. And no matter how you interact with the folks at World's Greatest Comics, if you do interact with them, please let them know that you heard about the store from John Orlando on the PVD cast.
Can we transition back to some of your acting gigs and acting roles? You've had a list of various different roles, from being on shows like The Americans, Inside Amy Schumer, One Life to Live. But I would like to ask you about your experience on SVU. Because I heard an interview, and this interview's been several years ago, but it stuck with me, is I heard an interview with Christopher Maloney, who stated that on the days when they got their script, that some of the people would shudder if a female had wrote the script, because it tended to be a lot tougher on you emotionally, because they just would, you know, go for it, you know, and that heavy material sometimes was really tough to deal with. So if I may, how was your experience with SVU? Did you ever have any like of that heavy subject material that you had to kind of get through, and how did that impact you?
Well, so my role on SVU is Nurse Shelby Roberts. I, spoiler alert, am about to come back because Chris Maloney is coming back. So I actually just got to shoot with Chris. But my role as a nurse in this world does not require me to carry the emotional burden in the same way as a series lead, as Mariska or Chris, who, or Kelly or Peter or Ice or anybody who does the real emotional heavy lifting. Again, I've gotten to watch those actors work, which has been really lovely and informative and educational. But no, I'm just a nurse. So, I was originally hired. It was not meant to be a recurring role. It was just meant to be a one scene. I believe it was described as sassy nurse. So in general, my TV roles are shows where they need somebody to talk like a person and land a joke. So I got brought in as the sassy nurse to do this one scene with Mariska and Kelly. And I heard shortly after that they were starting to think about, after 20 years, establishing nurses and cops and lawyers on the show so they didn't have to keep recasting them every week. And so, again, I'm very lucky that they liked me and the experience was good. And so now I'm coming back. I think this is my sixth time. I'm still waiting for my own spinoff, but, you know, one of these days. That's an interesting quote, though, and I will say the episode that I am in coming up with Chris does have some heavy emotional stuff and was written by a woman. So that is an accurate observation.
Well, let's start wrapping a few things up here, if you will, Allison. So you are from Ohio, so I have to ask you, what's the best part of living in New York City as opposed to living in Ohio?
Not living in Ohio. I don't mean it. Listen, you know, living in New York during the pandemic has been heartbreaking, because I miss the city that I live in. I'm very lucky, again, that I have had a freelance career that I've worked really hard to build, but I have built that career so that I could be in a city that has the best art and culture and food and drinks and people, and all of that has gone away in the last year. And so I really feel the shadows of the New York that was here pre-pandemic. And I hope that it can come back. I'm sure that it will, maybe not right away. You know, what's the best thing? You can get a slice at 4 a.m. when you come home from the bar. It's true. Like, it's a place where you can get anything and everything at any time of the day. And that's the thing that, like, when I go home to Ohio, I do miss that. I do miss, like, the convenience of being able to order one bottle of wine to my home, or, you know, get aspirin at whatever time of the day. There is just an unstoppable quality about the city that I admire and I really continue to love about it.
You know, I just interviewed another actor, Michael Spedden, who stated that he believes, and you can give me your thoughts on this statement. he believes that after the pandemic, we're going to have like maybe another explosion of like artistic endeavors because of the pandemic has, you know, kept people indoors and kept us bottled up, so to speak, and that he feels like there's going to be another 1920s.
I mean, I think that's very optimistic and very hopeful. And again, like, frankly, I hope so. What I will say, what I'm seeing is a lot of small theaters closing and a lot of small rehearsal studios and places that I have relied on for 15 years going away. So what I do think is that actors, performers, creators will continue to innovate. I think people make in the streets if they have to. There's something about that creative drive that can't be taken away by a theater space. But I do worry that for at least, you know, the next couple of years, it's just going to be hard to restart some of these traditional spaces and venues that we're used to.
All right. Final question before we plug upcoming projects, social media and all that. Who are some of your inspirations in the film world?
You know, I know you just asked about the film world because we're talking about my film, but
you can tell me any inspiration. That's an inspiration.
Yeah, it's interesting because I do think, particularly in this age of streaming and binging, that TV has become so much more filmic. But you know, Michaela Cole and I May Destroy You really changed the way that I saw storytelling. Similarly, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who at this point, it almost seems cliche to say that Fleabag season 2 is a work of art. But I truly believe that. I truly think that like there's something special about Phoebe and the way she sees the world. Emerald Fennell right now, who just made Promising Young Woman, I think is incredible. And also somebody who is an actor, writer, producer. You know, I'm very interested in how multi-hyphenate women particularly are kind of working through this world. And so I'm really drawn to, I think, both women who they themselves are complicated, but who produce work that is complicated. So if you have seen Young Woman, give it a look.
Or any of those other shows.
I mean, or Fleabag. If there's anyone out there who hasn't seen Fleabag yet, please watch it. Please. It's actually a good example of something that if you didn't know anything about it, you would watch it and say, oh, this is a rom-com. And the way that she breaks your heart in that show, I just think is so special.
All right. Well, let's talk about some upcoming projects, Allison, website, social media, where folks keep tabs on you and whatnot.
Well, I'm developing the feature of First Date. So I'm working on that now, TBD if that ever happens. And I am working on this, web novel called Don't Want to Remember You. It's a YA novel that'll be released in chapters online through Tapas Media. I'm at AllisonM.com. It's AllisonM.com. I'm also Allison M on Twitter. And I am Starbright114 on Instagram, which was my AOL name when AOL first came out.
That's awesome. Kudos. Yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah. Writing, auditioning. I'm probably going to like order some Domino's later. That's what I'm up to. Still got some emails to answer tonight. You know, we're all doing our best.
Hey, that sounds like a typical Thursday night to me, you know?
You know, I got to tell you, I miss Adriatico's every day of my life.
Oh, okay.
I miss that slab pizza. Oh, man.
Well, Allison, thank you very, very much for taking some time out of your evening to sit down and chat with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. This was such a delight.
Thanks. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back in a few moments to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Allison Morgan talking about First Date, Law & Order SVU, rom-coms, film festivals, all kinds of cool things. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, there's a couple different ways you could tell me about it.
First of all, if you'd like, you can shoot me an email. My email address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can also leave me a message over on the Facebook or the Instagram feeds of the PVDcast. Just look for @PVDcast. And you can even find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. And if you need to let somebody know where they can get this podcast, well, tell them there's a lot of different ways. You can first maybe go over to PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, to get it. But it's also available through all those major podcasting outlets. Just go to your favorite outlet in the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it. Why? I don't know. Because that's how the technology overlords say it has to happen? Anyways, as I said, put PVDcast into the search engine and you should be able to find it. And once you listen to an episode, please rate and review. That helps me out in the algorithm. I'd love 5-star reviews, by the way. And don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. And I also have a few live broadcasts, too. The first one happens every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, through the Facebook page of the PVDcast. Once again, that's @PVDcast. You can catch this week's episode. And if you miss it on Monday, it's replayed through the Scene Snobs Network's Facebook page at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Tuesdays. Check out the Scene Snobs over on Facebook. Those guys got some great podcasts, lots of fun stuff going on with that channel, and I'm proud to be part of it. All right, well, that being said then, ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time for me to get on out of here. Once again, I thank you for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, stay safe and healthy. Production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2021.